listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Greetings and salutations. I'm Bernie Fratto. We're coming to you live from the Geico Fox Sports Radio studios, where 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. So go to geico.com for a free rate quote. This is Straight Out of Vegas, the pregame show you always wanted. And as they say in Maple Grove, Minnesota, it's going to be lit. You know, there's an old Chinese proverb which states, "May you live in interesting times." And it was actually once quoted by President John F. Kennedy in a speech. Of course, the quote has a dual meaning. Interesting times may contain danger and uncertainty, but they can also produce creativity, advancement, and progress. Well, if there's one thing the coronavirus phenomenon has reminded us of, it's that sports are truly an integral part of our society. They are not extracurricular. They are interwoven into the fabric of America. They inspire us, entertain us. They teach us life lessons. Now, sports also provide a vehicle for us to feed our competitive spirit. See, betting on games not only enhances the viewing participation of the sporting event itself, well, it feeds a primal nature of the combative quality that all sports bettors have. So the desire to win, the need to win, the adrenaline rush, and along the way, we realize sports are a metaphor for life. Well, if you can't play or watch the games and you can't get down a wager either, well, the next best thing is talking about them. It's cathartic. It's therapeutic. It's what we do. Sports are entertainment. But more than that, they're a shared experience. As such, people want to talk about them. So tonight, we take the show in a slightly different direction as I welcome in a gentleman I've known since 1995. Together, we logged thousands of hours on Detroit radio, covering all the major sports teams, and along the way, working on events like Super Bowl 40, the 2006 World Series, the 2005 Major League Baseball All-Star Game, the NBA Finals, Stanley Cup Playoffs, Malice at the Palace. Well, and of course, we spent many years as part of the Detroit Lions on-air team broadcasting the pre- and post-game shows for the Detroit Lions. So let's say hello to Emmy Award-winning Mark the Man Wilson. Mark?
Hello, Bernie. Wow, that's very nice of you, and I'm thrilled to be with you.
Dude, we talked on the phone, as we always do, and you reminded me...
We do better shows on the phone.
Well, don't say that. Thursday was supposed to be opening day, and...
Yes.
You know, we heard our esteemed partner Rob Parker's soliloquy.
It was awesome.
Thursday night. Call the Peabody people.
That was great.
It was really terrific.
It was really good.
Because it was heartfelt, and it was sincere, and it was genuine. And we all feel the same thing. But you pointed out that this was 25-year anniversary of what was also supposed to be an opening day, but didn't happen for an entirely different reason. And part of the theme for tonight's show is how sports, the course of history in sports, has changed or might have changed due to unexpected events.
Well, if you 25 years ago, we're talking about the replacement baseball stuff.
Bingo.
Going on. You know, after the strike of 94, they came back with replacement baseball to start. I was at the spring we had two spring trainings. I was at replacement baseball spring training, which was just I'm going to be careful here. I called it a clutterbuck. I did it on TV because Brian Clutterbuck,
Minnesota Twin.
Well, I think he was a Brewers too. Was actually in that Tiger camp.
Now, this is when you were with Fox 2 Detroit.
Correct.
As the lead anchor,
right.
Sports. Go ahead.
So I go down
TV.
There. I go down there, and it was just unbelievable. Sparky Anderson had famously walked away.
Oh, yeah.
Refusing to, as he said, "I will not damage the integrity of this game. These are not the Tigers." He walks away. I had to go to Joe Klein, who was the general manager at the time. I said, "Joe, your manager just left. You got a guy?" Now, you know who the guy was.
Tom Reynolds.
Tom Reynolds.
Yeah.
And I went, the Expos guy? I didn't even, Tom Runnels? Oh, yeah, we just hired him for minor league. So he took over. It was just that bad. And we thought that they would actually start a season with replacement guys.
They were this
Came
close.
Very close.
Yes.
In fact, it was current Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor, who was very instrumental, along with President Clinton, in ending that strike 25 years ago. And then we had the second spring training in April when the real guys came back. They wouldn't play with the scabs. The scab guys couldn't get, I think Kevin Millar was one of them, could not be part of the union for the rest of their careers because they weren't allowed to do that. That was one of the penalties. So 25 years ago was a very strange, weird time period, because at this time, literally, what is today, the 28th? We didn't know what was going to happen. We weren't sure what baseball was going to do. They were not that close until the final minutes, literally the 11th hour, Bernie, until that got settled and we had the second spring training. And then, of course, 95 became the year of Cal Ripken.
But March 10th of 1995, a famous gentleman who played another sport walked away.
Yeah.
And you talked to him, and what's interesting is this plays into our theme, because had there not been a strike, Ron Shuler, the general manager of the White Sox, indicated he probably would have gotten a September call-up, and maybe a certain basketball team might not have gone on to win three straight championships.
Michael Jeffrey Jordan. Michael Jordan, just about 25 years ago, remember he was in his second year.
He just finished it up in Double A.
Double A.
But he had in a great Arizona Fall League.
He had a very good Arizona Fall League. He only hit 202. Terry Francona was the manager of the Birmingham Barons.
Right.
But I remember a guy telling me, he said, don't look at the 202 average. Look at the 51 ribbies. Look at the 30 steals. That's what they were looking more at Jordan. Remember, we weren't doing analytics like we do today with everything. And there's no, I have to always have to preface, there's no internet, there's no social media, so we don't have that daily. But I spent some time on the old corridor, the I-4 corridor, going up to 75 South, going over to Fruitvale Road and going to Ed Smith Stadium in Sarasota. Because the story to me was Jordan in training camp. I mean, the baseball Jordan was still, again, amazing to me that he even did that. We all thought it might be a self-exile because of the gambling thing in the NBA, and maybe they had done some deal. Obviously, it was the White Sox. Jerry Reinsdorf owns both the White Sox and the Bulls. Don't forget that, too. But you mentioned it. Ron Shuler had planned at that time, at some point, that Jordan was going to make his Major League debut. Now, it never got that far because he then had a little tiff with Shuler, who wanted Jordan to play replacement games. Jordan refused. He would not be part of
it.
He was not going to be a scab.
Not going to cross the line.
So just about 25 years ago, right about now, he got in his private plane at Sarasota Bradenton Airport. He flew away. Remember, he came back with just two words. I'm back.
I'm back.
That was it. There was no big press release. There was no big press conference. And then on March 19th, 1995, Jordan's wearing number 45, scores 19 against the Indiana Pacers in a loss at Indiana. And that was it. We never heard of baseball again. Jordan was done. So you're right. What would have been different had we didn't have
We're never going to know.
Never going to know. Would Jordan might have stuck with baseball, but he'd never have gone. He said he was burnt out.
Well, Ron Shuler, though, he was. But Ron Shuler, the general manager of the White Sox, was amazed at Jordan's progress from year one to year two, right?
Well, I spent time with Jordan a lot more in 95 before he left than in 94. 94, there was a lot of media.
Mm-hmm.
By the time it was the second year, some guys had just said, oh, who cares anymore? It was just less media. So I had time to spend with Jordan. We would sit around. You could see his dedication was amazing, okay?
There at 7 a.m. taking BP, all the things, first to third.
But the beauty was is that Michael Jordan had time to spend with us that were just hanging around the lockers because, now I was there for the Tigers, but I said, this is the story. It's still in Sarasota with the White Sox. And I even asked him, I made the paper in Chicago, because I said, at one point, I hit him on the knee and I said, hey, Mike, you know, this Grant Hill, they're saying he's the next Michael Jordan. And he looks, and he gives me this look.
That lit a fire.
Here's the look. He goes, this is the look. Okay, he's going to kill me. But no, he says, you know what? Nah, he's more like Scottie Pippen. But I do like his game. And he gave me one a little winky thing there. So he had basketball on the mind the whole time. There were rumors that he was working at Riverview High School in Sarasota, just going shooting occasionally.
I believe that's
true.
Hey,
when you're in spring training, you don't have any else. What else are you going to do? Hang out, go play. He could have played golf, I guess, more. But that was crazy because we'll never know the result of that had replacement baseball not been a thing.
And he probably – I'm going to guess that he would not have returned to the Bulls and the Bulls would not have resumed because he won three in a row, took a year or two off. Then they come. He comes back and they win three in a row.
Well, I think Reinsdorf especially wanted to see – look, he was his guy. He owned both teams.
Well,
so if he doesn't go back to the Bulls, he's a White Sox guy. So, of course, Reinsdorf wants to get him in the majors.
But somewhere in the spring of 95, it was no longer a publicity stunt. In all seriousness, they thought
this
guy...
You know what? I've thought about that for 25 years to this day, Bernie, and I'm going to tell you, whatever the reason, the gaming thing, his dad passing, you know, that whole tragedy, throughout it all, I really think he put a lot of effort into the baseball thing. He really wanted to see if that could happen.
He did. He wanted to get to the big
leagues. He promised his dad he would do it.
Let me digress for just a second because you talked about Sparky.
Yeah.
Sparky refused to manage the replacement players. You talk about still waters running deep. In 2004, I was there when the Tigers had the 20-year anniversary of the 1984 team that was epic, 35-5, beat the Padres in the World Series. There were two people conspicuously gone. One, Marty Castillo, but the other, Sparky Anderson. And you talk about still waters running deep. The two sides never forgave each other, and Mike Ilitch and him just never really patched.
It was Ilitch, you're right, partly. It was mostly Joe Klein. And I think the problem that Sparky had was that Ilitch didn't back him. And he went with Klein, and he picked his battles, and yes, he chose Joe Klein at the time, the GM, who then, of course, left after 95, and Randy Smith became the general manager. And we know how that turned out.
Oh, Pinocchio Smith.
We know how that
turned
out.
We could do three shows on that. Mark, you know, one of the things Rob talked about the other night, if you get a chance, listen to it. It's archived Thursday night, The Odd Couple, because Rob's a huge baseball fan, and as we all are. And you know what's interesting, Mark, is it's not so much that opening days are notable, but they're memorable. I have a couple because these are the two that stick out in my mind. They're fairly innocuous because Rob had Dave Justice on that night, and so they got off on this little tangent about how Rob tried to get Dave Justice to become a Frank Sinatra fan, and it didn't work. Opening day, 1977, Dodger Stadium. Who sings the national anthem? Frank Sinatra. Who forgets the words? Frank Sinatra. Wow. Forgot the words. The other one, and I want to hear your opening day story after I'm done, but opening day, Comerica Park, when it opened in 2000, first of all, it was about 35 degrees that day, with a wind chill was about 15 degrees, and the Seattle Mariners were dropping F-bombs around the batting cage. I was right there, and if the commissioner, Bud Selig, hadn't been there that day, he said the players' union would have canceled the game. But here comes the punchline. We didn't know. Sold-out stadium. Huge wind blowing from right field to left field. When the Tigers scored their inaugural run in 2000 on a single up the middle, these dancing waters shoot 100 feet into the air, and the wind blowing from right field to left field completely doused the people in the left field bleachers, and it was only about 15 degrees that day.
It was frozen.
I'm still thinking somebody had to die. We just never heard
of
it.
And there we go, another anniversary, 20 years.
20 years ago, right.
Comerica Park, April 11th was the day that opened against the Mariners, Tigers and Mariners. My favorite one was still the day we were on the air. Rob Parker and I were on the air, and we were kind of ripping the pitching staff, and we had Doug Brocale on. You all remember Doug Brocale? And I think Rob had asked him a yes or no question about, will the Tigers pitching staff be good enough to win anything? And I think Brocale came with it and said no. We get to the ballpark because we always went to we were in the locker room. We were in the clubhouse. We made sure we were there. And we walked down the old Tiger Stadium steps, and the first guy to see us is Greg Jeffries. At that time, he's a Tiger. He goes, oh, are you, and I can't say the word, in trouble. Brocale wants to see you right now, upstairs, outside, by the bullpen. I went, you know what? And he just kind of laid into us a little bit. It wasn't that bad. But the way Jeffries looked when he did that to us, I said it's going to be pretty – I'm going to remember this one. So that's what I remember. I don't know why that's a thing, but it's a thing.
Coming up, another gentleman with Michigan roots also who changed the fortunes of one franchise most certainly now has an opportunity to possibly change two franchises simultaneously. We'll get to that. You know, Discover matches all the cash back you earn on your credit card at the end of your first year. It's amazing because – see, Discover's accepted at 99% of the places in the U.S. that take credit cards. Learn more at discover.com/yes. 2020 Nielsen Report, limitations apply. He is Mark the Man Wilson. I'm Bernie Fratto. And we're coming to you live from the Geico Fox Sports Radio studios. This is the pregame show you always wanted, so don't go away. You're listening to Straight Outta Vegas.
Straight Outta Vegas!
We are back on Straight Outta Vegas, the pregame show you always wanted. I'm Bernie Fratto, joined by Mark the Man Wilson, coming to you live from the Geico Fox Sports Radio Studios. What does it mean when Geico says just 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance? Means you probably should have gone to geico.com 15 minutes ago. Mark, we were both at Michigan, a young guy by the name of Tom Brady. Yeah, he was there at Michigan. I only had one conversation with him his entire time, but he made quite a name for himself. And then he went on to the NFL. And what's interesting is there are two stories people really don't know, because can you imagine? We're talking about 219 regular season wins, 30 postseason wins, 6 Super Bowl wins, 4 Super Bowl MVPs. By the way, all of them, the most in NFL history. It almost didn't happen.
Yeah. Let's start with the fact that Brady almost played baseball. All right? People diss that, but he really wanted to play baseball. He actually was offered better money when he was drafted by the Montreal Expos as a left-handed hitting catcher.
Out of high school, San Mateo High School, yep.
And he made the right choices, it turns out. He wanted to play football. He just went a little bit above baseball, but the Expos came at him hard. So now he goes to Michigan. And like you said, he battled Drew Henson. His entire time there at Michigan, it seemed, was always about Henson and Brady. And Brady ended up starting about 25, went 20-5 as a starter, and won two bowl games. So he's during that time, I learned about Tom Brady one thing. That every time people talk about his demeanor and he's a very happy guy, what a nice guy he is, through all the stuff, through 20 years of stuff, I've always told people he's an SOB.
He's a nerd. A nerd.
In a good way. But he always does it smiling. So every time you see Brady, and sometimes he'll take little shots at people and whatnot, he can swear too. I've seen him do that pretty good. He's always got a smile on his face. And I think that's always been the difference between a guy like him and someone who doesn't have a smile on his face.
Think about 25 starts, though, is not necessarily a lot. Now, I remember, he ran the scout team and was destroying the defense. I asked him a question. What's the best advice Lloyd Carver gave you? He said, well, I went in there one day and told Coach I should be starting. And he said, Tom, I'm going to give you some advice for life, and it's advice for football. Worry about yourself.
Yeah, that's a good one. And that's a Lloyd Carr. That sounds like Lloyd. Remember, there was a third guy involved, Jason Kapsner.
Yes.
For a big quarterback from Eden Prairie, Minnesota. And he played. He played against Northwestern, Purdue, Rice, I believe. Kapsner got into games. So there was a third guy involved in the troika that is Tom Brady, Drew Henson, and Jason Kapsner at Michigan. So here comes the draft. So we're at the 20th anniversary of the Tom Brady draft.
Correct.
Here we go. 2000, 198 pass on him, sixth round pick, number 199. And I want to tell you this right now, okay? First of all, he was fourth on the depth chart when he got to New England. Drew Bledsoe was the starter. He started every game the previous year, 16 games, started them all. They had John Freese as the backup, and they had Michael Bishop.
From Kansas State. Before you got a great story. I just want to say one thing. Thank you. I remember Brady's last game.
At Michigan.
At Michigan.
Right.
When he beat Alabama, 38-35, and Freddie Millins. Bama was a 7-point favorite. Michigan wasn't supposed to have a chance. All nothing. Brady, 4 touchdown passes. He single-handedly beat that team. I said to myself, why can't this guy?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, though, because that's part of the Brady chip on the shoulder, is that he thought he was very good. He thought he was better than what his combine looked like, which was not great. His numbers weren't good. His measurements and his measurables, as they say, were not very good. He did a 33, I believe, on the
Wunderlich.
On the Wunderlich. I always like to call it the Rorschach test. I don't know why I do that.
Must be the mustard stain on my shirt you're looking at.
It's sad that I remember Brady's Wunderlich test. I'm kind of obsessed with the story about Brady early, though, because when you get to the draft and he gets to New England, I'm just going to say it flat out. He could have been caught at any time, and no one would have said boo.
Well, you tell the tale. Belichick got outvoted.
Pretty much everybody around the room, with the exception of Belichick, I think, and Scott Pioli was in his first year as GM at the time, even though Belichick kind of ran the show. Pioli joined the Patriots in 2000. I think Pioli was also on the Brady train because they had two Bradys. They had Bledsoe and Freeze. Michael Bishop, even Brady had told me at the exhibition game at the Silverdome that year that he said Michael Bishop might be the best athlete I've ever seen. So he was kind of before the Lamar Jackson, the whole Jackson and Deshaun Watson kind of player,
right,
who could really move around. He was way ahead of the time.
He was a Michael Vick type.
He was Michael Vick before.
About
the same time as Vick. So I'm telling you, now don't forget this. Brady stat line for 2000 is 3 attempts, 1 completion, 6 yards. Now, the one completion, that's the trivia question, who did he throw his first, is Rod Rutledge, former tight end of the Patriots. It was the Thanksgiving Day game against the Lions of the Silver Dome, so twice he comes back to town, twice I talked to him. Both times he thought he was going to get cut. We were talking about maybe Cleveland, go to San Francisco, Kansas City came up, San Francisco, because he's a Northern California, he's a California guy. He didn't think he'd be a Patriot. I really think, and you don't see that a lot on the Wikipedia. You don't hear a lot about that first year, but that first year he could have been cut at any time, and only that Thanksgiving Day game did he play. And what if Bledsoe doesn't get hurt in 2001?
Again, another situation where how might the sports landscape history had changed?
There was no talk about dumping Bledsoe then.
Not at all.
He had just started all. He went to the Super Bowl with the Patriots.
And let me tell you, to this day, they say that's one of the loudest hits in the history of the NFL that Bledsoe got knocked the next Tuesday.
Remember who it was? It was Mo Lewis of the Jets.
Mo Lewis, and he became Wally Pipp.
He really literally became Wally Pipp. Because basically Brady comes in and doesn't come out until he goes to Tampa Bay.
So think about it. Brady almost doesn't go play football at Michigan. He didn't have a lot of offers.
Right.
Drafted as a left-handed hitting catcher out of San Mateo High School. Almost cut. You had a
couple of times.
Well, initially.
Because Michael Bishop played, too.
In the preseason.
Freeze and in the regular season. He got in some games. And so did John Freeze, even though Bledsoe started all 16. Brady only played the 1 3-minute stint and went 1 for 3. That was his stat line. If you go look, it's crazy. Looks weird.
So everybody wants to know, why did Brady leave? Was he tired of Bill? Look, I just think it's very simple. Let's demystify this. He wants two things. He wanted to get paid, and he got a 2-year deal, and he wants to win. And don't think they can't win with Bruce Arians. My buddy, our good beloved friend Rob Parker and I are going to disagree on this vehemently.
Now, Rob loves Tom Brady.
Oh, loves him. Wants to
They're in love with each
other. Hashtag sarcasm. So the bottom line is, how will Brady do in Tampa? I think he'll do very well. That's a team that won 7 games last year. They had a quarterback that turned the ball over 38 times.
30 picks.
30 picks. Not only were they 30 picks, Mark, 22 of the 38 turnovers that he had were inside their own 39-yard line and posting real, problems for the defense. 6 of those picks were pick sixes, and 6 of those picks were on first drives. They were killer.
Jameis Winston is the first 30-30 player in the history of the NFL. 30 touchdowns and 30 interceptions. But here's in my opinion, this is Bruce Arians. Hey, Jameis, I can lose with you. I can lose without you. Remember, Tampa Bay is now second to Cleveland and not having made the playoffs. It's now 12 years. Cleveland's number one, I think, was 17 years. No playoff win since they won the Super Bowl in 2002. That's 0 in 18 years. Double-digit losses 7 of the last 11 years for Tampa. It was worth the shot. It's worth the money. It's worth the try, because if they were 7-9 with that team and the way that if they can find
stops. Dude, they're a 10-win team.
If Brady doesn't add 3 wins to that, I'll be shocked.
24 touchdowns, 8 interceptions last year. He'll manage the game. His arm strength is fine. I think
he ain't throwing 30 picks.
Ask Ben Roethlisberger how he liked Bruce Arians in Pittsburgh. How'd that offense go after he left? By the way, Chuck Pagano, and I'm glad he fully recovered, had cancer. Bruce Arians takes over in Indianapolis. Did just fine. I think this is going to be something to watch this
really
year.
I really do, too.
I'm
with you.
40-1. To 18-1, to 14-1, Pat's going the other way. Pat's win total now 8.5. I'm not saying Jarrett Stidham might not be the next whoever.
What about Brian Hoyer, Michigan State University?
You know, he's become like the Vince Evans without the BMW.
Three times with New England, 10 different trips around the league. It's Brian Hoyer. He practices well, I guess.
He's very serviceable. But
he's
I don't know that you're going to win a Super Bowl with him. Just
a Michigan
saying.
Wolverine replaced by a Spartan.
Well, how about that? Oh, boy.
I'd love it.
Well, that sounds like a drop.
I would love it.
Coming up, the NBA is what lit the fuse for this entire row of dominoes. When everything keeps getting canceled and postponed, we've got some NBA stories as well and how that might have affected history. But first, let's go to the man. Well, he's not afraid to admit to Fox Sports Radio icon Jason Smith that he's been like a father to him. It's Brian Finley with the latest.
Thank you so much, Bernie. I have a lot of dads, and that is definitely the case. We'll just continue from there. New York Knicks owner Jim Dolan has coronavirus, the team reassuring he's currently self-isolating and is feeling little to zero symptoms. NBA insider Adrian Wojnarowski reported when the league was thinking about playing games without fans, the Knicks were the only team in the league against it at the time, unless the government stepped in. Retired St. Louis Cardinals slugger Jim Edmonds has checked into a hospital and is getting tested for coronavirus. Bobby Hebert Sr., the father of former Falcons and Saints quarterback Bobby Hebert, has died after coming down with coronavirus. Bobby Hebert Sr.'s grandson tweeting out about his grandfather, quote, "He is the wisest, kindest, and most tactful person I have ever known. He passed this morning, and I love him, and I will miss him," end quote. DePaul Jr. Paul Reed is bound for the NBA draft. He's projected to go somewhere between the middle of the first and second rounds. The Chiefs are bringing back wide receiver DeMarcus Robinson on a one-year deal. His coming out game was week two of last year in a win against the Raiders, 172 yards receiving. And the Ravens, after puking away their chances and getting Michael Brockers as a consolation, getting Derek Wolfe on a one-year deal worth up to $6 million as we send it back to the main man in Bernie Fratto.
No fans, what's the big deal, Brian? The Chicago Bulls have been doing that for years, buddy.
Yes.
Hey, by the way, while I got you, and you are the Mac Daddy, question, which sport is going to return first?
I think golf is going to return first. It was one
of the the team sports of the four majors.
Well, see, now you tell me, Bernie. Come on.
I told you I got a few holes in my game.
All right.
Hockey, so, basketball, football.
It's definitely not going to be the NBA. I'm going to go with the NHL because I know some of our other coworkers are going to go with another league, and I don't want to overstep and say the same thing. But I don't think it's going to be the NBA because they were the first, and I do think that once one league does get themselves ready to play, it's going to be kind of a trickle effect. But the NBA might be the last, if you're asking me.
All right, NHL. Chris Perfett, what are your thoughts?
So I originally was going to say NHL, then I've kind of seen the number of cases rise for them for the coronavirus. And trouble is going to be with baseball here. As much as we're missing opening day, it's going to get more complicated as it goes on. I'm going to have to say, and it really drives me a little in the gut, but I think we're going to see football come back first. It's going to come back at its regular time.
No. All right, hold on. Dismissed. Yeah. All right. Well, at least you're honest, Chris. I've never. All right, thanks, guys. Look, we talk about the NBA. That's the league that lit the fuse.
Knicks were the only team.
The Rudy Gobert situation. So we welcome in. This is a feature we created February 8th, long before we knew any of this craziness would happen. Mackenzie Rivers, Mack and I on the NBA. So Mark Wilson, Mark the Man Wilson, myself, and Mackenzie, we're going to have a little NBA roundtable here because we are chock full of crazy stories that, again, occurred that would have changed the course of the NBA. And I'm going to start with one real quickly because, Mark, and I think I've told both of you guys this story. Well, I was an intern at the Forum, Magic Johnson's rookie year. Now, I remember legendary broadcaster Chick Hearn. Mm-hmm. The Lakers were drafting number one overall that year in 1979, and Chick very much wanted Sidney Moncrief. He didn't want anything to do with Magic Johnson. Now, obviously, Magic was drafted number one. Chick was livid. Yes, I know I was there. And I remember Chick saying things like he lumbered gracefully. Didn't think he had a shot. Well, all kinds of things. Well, that all changed when the Lakers beat the San Diego Clippers in the first game and he jumped into Jabbar's arms. And then 9 months later, they beat Philadelphia. Magic plays all three positions and the rest is history. But can you imagine?
Well,
had the Lakers never acquired Irvin Magic Johnson?
I watched him in college. I went to school with Magic. I was at Michigan State University.
You were. No, it's a true story. You were.
I mean, one national championship.
And I was in Salt Lake City when they won that against that's still the most watched championship game in the history of television was the Indiana State.
And you were on a year ago, by the way. We had you on the 40-year anniversary. No, because there's something to that story, too. When the Spartans lost to Northwestern a couple of weeks before the tournament started, you couldn't have pictured the Magic Bird game in a million years.
They were horrible. They were 4-4 in the Big Ten, and I thought they were going nowhere, and they were screaming at each other, and Judd Heathcote was yelling at Magic, at Irvin, and Greg Kelser was yelling at Irvin, and Bobo Charles was yelling at – it was terrible. So I never would have seen that coming, but to think that Irvin Johnson wasn't going to make it in the NBA is a little crazy because I just thought he was – I'd never seen anything like it before my 2 years with him at Michigan State.
Sidney Moncrief was a pretty good
defender. Right? Hell of a player.
Well, look, I'm going
to
tell you.
Had a nice elbow jumper. Let's not diminish what Sidney Moncrief meant to this league. Maybe not.
Yeah, but he was not. Look.
Maybe not.
I was there. I swear to God, I'll never forget the day Magic walked by me for the first time. Now, this is 1979. 6'9", point guard. 6'9", amazing skills, passer, the ability to elevate an entire franchise. Now, good. He didn't have a three-point shot then. He wasn't a great free-throw shooter. He didn't have his baby hook. He didn't have any of those things. But he had everything else you could ever imagine. So when that first – if you look at his old – even his Michigan State, even the game against Indiana State, he was able to create offense, but it wasn't necessarily the polished – addition.
You know that lost by 18 to the worst team in basketball, Northwestern, that year, before they went on that run, only lost one more game.
Right.
That was the last against Wisconsin. Magic had a triple-double that game.
Not bad.
Still had a triple-double.
So can you imagine if there would have never been a Magic Bird game, Magic hadn't been drafted by the Lakers, Magic went to the finals 9 of 12 years with the Lakers and won 5 championships.
Here's another thing people don't know. The Lakers also had an all-star point guard that they were Norm Nixon. But they're like, this guy's too good. He can play power forward, and we'll give him point guard later in games, later in championships, it turns out. But you got to just pick the best player available. I don't know what Chuck Hearns was thinking at the time, but the top-end potential of a Magic Johnson versus Sidney Moncrief, Lakers had a no-brain decision about it.
Well, it's easy to say that now, but I was there, and
I've
only
seen this on YouTube 20 years before I was born, but I think they made the right decision.
Well, I think so.
What are you trying to say, man? That we're old?
I'm saying that 1980 was the highlight of my life of basketball.
Just remember, Mark Twain once said, never complain about getting older. Many fine people are denied the privilege. All right, Mark, we were on the air in one of the most memorable, infamous events in Detroit sports history.
Oh, Malice of the Palace?
Bingo.
We had the 15th anniversary. See, this is like an anniversary show. 15th anniversary was last November, so it's the same season.
November 19th, 2004.
Believe it or not, the Detroit Pistons were the defending NBA champions, which seems crazy now to think.
Larry Brown, baby.
And so there was this innocuous game, and Bernie and I were on the air in Detroit. It was a game in November. It was at the end. The Pacers were kicking some Piston butt. And then I think we both looked up at the I didn't even know why we had the game still on. And we looked up and went, what the hell is going on? Something's happening at the Palace. And then all of us, as we say that, Ron Artest goes crazy. He starts going to the stands. John Green, one of the fans, longtime Piston fans. I forget the other
empty
guy.
Bear
I actually
cup.
The, I actually wrote
that the
other
guy that got punched in the face who walked up to the player.
That,
he's like, hey.
The other guy got punched in the face, too. The other guy got punched. Alvin Shackelford, I think, got punched.
He sounds like he should be punched in the face.
Alvin Shackelford. And it was on. And it really changed the landscape of the East because the Pacers were off to a good start.
And there's a backstory there as well, because that Pacers team was coached by a former disgruntled Pistons coach, mm-hmm. right?
Rick Carlisle.
And had that all, we're going to get back to this, because had not there not been so many suspensions, etc., that Indiana Pacers team was incredible. By the way, McKenzie, to his credit, has compiled a great list here of players that are terrific that never really got a chance to make their mark in the NBA, but had they had that chance, and a couple of them with very decorated franchises, that might have changed the landscape as well. Discover matches all the cash back you earn on your credit card at the end of your first year. It's amazing because Discover is accepted at 99% of the places in the U.S. that take credit cards. Learn more at discover.com/yes. 2020 Nielsen report. Limitations apply. We'll be right back with that NBA talk. I'm Bernie Fratto. He's Mark DeMann Wilson. We're coming to you live from the Geico Fox Sports Radio studios. This is the pregame show you always wanted to. Don't go away. You're listening to Straight Outta Vegas.
Straight Outta Vegas!
We are back on Straight Outta Vegas, the pregame show you always wanted. I'm Bernie Fratto, coming to you live from the Geico Fox Sports Radio studios, joined in-house by Mark DeMann Wilson. Before I go any further, I want to thank our crew back in Los Angeles, Eric Roberts, Chris Perfett, Brian Finley, turning all the dials, keeping us glued together. We appreciate all your hard work, guys. McKenzie, I love this list you put together, but there's one name that really jumps at me, not because of his tragic circumstances, but what could have been.
Well, you're talking about Len Bias, the number 2 overall pick in 1986, a smooth small forward, they said, with the athleticism of Michael Jordan. And this is the thing. The Celtics drafted him in 86. They lose to the Lakers in the finals in 87. So this young man could have been part of something historic. I mean, this was a team on the rise. To add that kind of talent, it would have been unseen before.
I not only saw Len Bias play before Maryland against Pepperdine in Long Beach in the round of 64, but think about what you just said, the Celtics. They lost to the Lakers in the finals in 87. They were defending champions. They had just beaten Houston in 86. And in 84, they beat the Lakers, and 85 lost to the Lakers. They'd gone to 4 straight NBA finals, and you add Lenny Bias. Mark, you saw Lenny Bias.
terrific player. I mean, what can you say? It's been so well documented how great he could have been if he had. Imagine if he had actually focused on just basketball and not some of the dregs of his life that he went through. How much better he might have been. It is possible we be talking about him on the Mount Rushmore.
And think about it. So 88, the Pistons lost to the Lakers. 89, the Pistons broke through. 90.
Yeah.
Boston never got back to the finals for many, many, many years, and Red Auerbach lamented that.
Yeah. I mean, if they would have reloaded and restarted the dynasty, who knows what kind of coach they would have brought in? Who knows if Red would have stayed involved? But, you know, you move on, and a tragic loss like that opened the door for those bad boy Pistons in the 80s.
Now, here's another guy. People are going to recognize the last name because his son played for Gonzaga, and he's now in the NBA. But I saw this dude in the 88 Olympics, and he was so dominant, that's when John Thompson, who coached the 88 Olympic team for the U.S., said, we can no longer send our college kids.
We always think of great basketball as what happens in the NBA. I believe Bill Walton when he says this guy was a 7'3" Larry Bird. This was the best 20-year-old Bill Walton had ever seen, Arvydas Sabonis. Why didn't he dominate the NBA? Politics. He stayed in Russia. He stayed in the USSR. He came here and almost won a championship in 1999 as a 45-year-old man lumbering down the court. But he was athletic as anybody. He could shoot. This man, I think if you're true to basketball greatness and you're not looking at the NBA history, you got to include this guy as one of the great talents.
Well, if you saw Bill Walton play, he had all the moves Bill Walton had, and the Russians actually pulled a fast one because the Portland Trailblazers allowed Arvydas Sabonis to work out with him and train. The Russians said, let us get through the Olympics, and then we'll let him go, and then they didn't let him go. But you've got a couple of other names on here that are classics.
Yeah, staying in the international flavor, we got Oscar Schmidt. Some some might say Oscar, but they would be incorrect.
Yeah, the only reason I know it's Oscar, I don't think he cares, but hey, he's so decorated as a player. If you don't know who Oscar Schmidt is, go Wikipedia the guy. Go look at his basketball reference stuff. But you have it written down here, 29 years international basketball, 5 Olympics, top scorer in 3. But Oscar Schmidt, this is one final Michigan State story. Judd Heathcote, before Tom Izzo, he was this close to getting Schmidt to come from Brazil to Michigan State. I don't think he did a better recruiting job at anybody that never came. But he always said this. Irvin Johnson's still the best player he obviously ever saw and play and coached. Number 2 was Schmidt.
Number 3, Sidney Moncrief. No.
No, you never. I think you would probably go either Scott Skiles or Mateen Cleaves because they did want to. Well, he didn't coach him. But Oscar Schmidt was another guy who could have come to the United States. And I swear I'm going to get this right. I think it was Bobby Knight. We're all sitting in the office because they used to come up to see Judd a lot. Judd was their guy. And it is either Tarkanian or it was Jim Boeheim. So I don't want to get it wrong. So I'll just say there was a bunch of good guys in there singing the praises of Oscar Schmidt from Brazil. It was amazing player.
And at that vintage, he would have been on the same roster as Greg Kelsinger and Magic Johnson.
Yeah, because he's actually a year older than Irvin is. Irvin's going to be 61. Schmidt's about 62 now.
And you ask the contemporaries, I mean, they didn't play with him in the NBA, but they played against Sabonis. They played against Oscar Schmidt. And they said these guys were as good as any. And I bring this all up to say this. NBA might be the last league to come back. Basketball does not have to be the last sport. Basketball is so much bigger and broader. If Kevin Durant, LeBron James, and Steph Curry want to have a King of the Mountain tournament in their house, I am tuning in.
Are you in? You're all in?
You could call it the We Are Tested tournament. There's a test at the front door, and once you get in, there's 2-on-2. You got Durant, LeBron, Curry, Thompson. You got Kawhi holding a horse in the corner. These are the greatest basketball players in the world. The NBA is smaller than them. They want to take a big stage. They want to do something fun. Let's play horse in the park at Rutgers. I'll do all the cleaning. I will Clorox it. It'll be fresh.
I'm digging what you're slinging.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You talk about players. How often do you do a 30 for 30 on a guy who never played in the league, but he had a moniker, and it said, the GOAT could go?
Earl, the GOAT, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, you sat him down, you said, who is the greatest you ever played? He'll think about Michael, he'll think about Magic. But he answered this question in the affirmative. The best player I ever played against, Earl the GOAT Manigault, about a 6'3" kid from the streets of New York that never made it out of the streets of New York, but he could take the dollar off the top of a backboard, and he can shoot it from anywhere.
And leave change.
And so leave change. So that's the legend.
When he was Lou Alcindor.
Yes, Lou Alcindor
says. There you go.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar now says Muhammad.
Well, I'll say this.
Earl Manigault was the man.
He did look like he had game, and the reason I don't completely dismiss that is because I saw Lloyd Sweet P. Daniels on Christmas Day in 1992 play for the Spurs and score like 18 points. He didn't play in college. He didn't play in high school, but he was an NBA player, and I'm like, how does this happen? He was like from a different planet.
Yeah. Basketball is an amazing thing. It's bigger than the NBA.
I want to thank Mark the Man Wilson for coming in tonight. We had so many great many years in Detroit.
Am I done?
Emmy Award winning. Thanks again, Mackin. Thanks to the guys back in Los Angeles. We got to do this again. The bottom line is, look, we don't know where the sports world is going, but we know where it's been. And this isn't the first time there's been stoppages. All right, that's going to do it for this week's edition of Straight Outta Vegas. Up next, it's Jason Martin and the Jason Martin Show. Keep it locked.
Straight Outta Vegas!